Thanks for downloading this edition of The Why Factor, a programme that seeks to find out why we do the things we do. I hope you enjoy it.
There was one time I remember when I was feeling fine. I wasn't feeling particularly anxious. It was morning. I was getting dressed.
Meet Morgan Griffin, a health writer and editor from Massachusetts in America.
I was putting on my pants, and I suddenly felt this weird sensation in my legs. This kind of pressure or something, and I start to, is it numbness? Is it tingling? Like, it's a really strange sensation. And I immediately thought, like, was this a stroke? Is this a stroke? And then I start thinking, well, you know, could be MS. You know, that often has symptoms of numbness in the legs. And seconds tick by, and I'm going through all these different options, and then I realize that I'm actually putting on my wife's pants. She's smaller than I am, and they were tight.
Why do people suffer from hypochondria? And why don't we take it seriously? BBC World Service, I'm Becky Milligan. Welcome to The Why Factor.
I'm constantly, you know, looking up medical conditions and then stowing that information away for a hypochondriacal freakout later. Things like, you know, headache, joint pain, stomach upsets, body ache, fatigue, those sorts of symptoms. In terms of conditions that I've been worried about, things like lupus, every variety of cancer, heart disease, hardening of the arteries, and high blood pressure, and the list would just go on and on and on of things over the
rheumatoid
years.
Rheumatoid arthritis?
Certainly, yes.
All kinds of arthritis?
Well, rheumatoid is more serious than osteoarthritis, so I would gravitate toward the more serious one. I'm looking for the fatal diseases generally.
I mean, do you think you're going to die? I mean, soon is what I mean. Sorry, I know we all die, don't we? But I mean, are you scared of death?
Very scared of death. And I would say that, for me, that is a big factor.
It literally means the area beneath the ribcage, hypo and the chondrion, or the connections between the ribs.
Catherine Belling is the author of A Condition of Doubt, The Meanings of Hypochondria.
So it means the part of the body that most importantly contains the spleen. And the spleen is the source of black bile, which is also melancholy. And so originally, hypochondria was a medical condition that had what we would now think of as psychological effects. The distinction between physical and psychological illness wasn't anything like as clear-cut as we think of it now.
And what did they do in those days? What was their kind of treatment for someone who had this illness?
Bloodletting, because it meant that your spleen was kind of clogged up with dried out, cold, black bile. And so the treatment was, first of all, to increase your temperature, increase your fluidity by drinking things like red wine, and then to let blood in the right places so that your balance could be restored. The idea was that it was literally, there was this physical stuff that if you could get rid of it, you would stop suffering from hypochondriacal melancholia. One of the classic ways in which the word entered the English language as someone who is not really sick but pretends to be is with Molière's play, translated as the hypochondriac in 1714, but which really in French means the imaginary invalid, which isn't quite the same.
This month I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different medicines and 12 treatments. Last month I had 12 different medicines and 15 treatments. Oh, no wonder I'm not so well now as I have been. I must see the doctor about this. Better have him sent for at once.
The lovely irony there is that in one of his performances, because Molière actually played the role of the hypochondriac in the play, in one of his performances, he started coughing up blood on the stage and no one was quite sure whether he was really sick or whether it was part of the performance. And he went home that night and died. He had very advanced tuberculosis.
I remember when I was around 10 years old, I had a pain in my side, which I mentioned to my father. And he asked me, well, where is it? What does it feel like? And I immediately knew that he was after some information. He was trying to sort of play it off in a casual way, but I sensed something was up. So I asked him, and he explained what the appendix was. So I subsequently pulled out, you know, one of the volumes of our Encyclopedia Britannica and was looking at the illustrations of the skeletal system, and they had these clear overlays of the muscular system and the circulatory system, and I would sort of look at that. It had a sort of lurid attraction to me in some way, and would look at the appendix and think a lot about the appendix. And I think that my understanding of what the appendix was a completely pointless organ. It's there for no reason, except occasionally it explodes inside your body like a dirty bomb or something.
Morgan continued to fret about his appendix, but his hypochondria may not have fully kicked in if his father hadn't died at the age of 43.
Completely unexpectedly. You know, it devastated my family, and it was... I consider myself a fairly rational person in most ways. And I think that there was a desire to figure out why it happened, what was missed, and a conviction that he must have missed some symptoms, and that my family, that I must have missed some signs too, and that by being vigilant and checking all these things out, you could potentially have prevented it or prevent future events.
It would be a few years later that Morgan recognized he was a hypochondriac.
I became convinced that I had lupus. It's an autoimmune condition. It's certainly conceivable that someone of my age could have had it, but it's predominantly in women. It didn't make a whole lot of sense that I would have it. And the thing about hypochondriacs in general is they gravitate toward conditions which have very ambiguous symptoms, things like headache or body ache or fatigue, the kinds of symptoms that people have all the time and ignore, but for the hypochondriac, these add up to something.
Their notion that headache that I have is not eye strain. That must be a brain tumor.
Arthur Barsky is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School.
That idea that you have a brain tumor causes you to monitor your headache much more closely. And the more you follow it, the more attention you pay to it, the more intense it will become, which just further convinces you that there's something really serious wrong.
The figure of the hypochondriac makes us all a little nervous because of that possibility that they might really be sick, and therefore, just because we feel fine, we might actually be sick too. And at the same time, there's a sense that if we don't have medical scientific evidence that they have a disease, they seem to be demanding attention that they don't merit, they don't really deserve. And so there's a kind of hostility towards someone who both alerts our anxiety and at the same time seems to be expecting care that should be going to someone who's, in inverted commas, really sick. Eventually we will all be sick, you know, which is, again, the kind of irony. And one of the reasons that patients that one might think of as hypochondriacs are such a challenge for doctors, because you can do studies and tests and as much examining as possible. And if the patient feels sick and you can find no evidence of disease, the best you can do is say, well, I can find no evidence of disease. But you can never say, honestly, you are 100% healthy and always will be.
So there is a rationality behind the hypochondriac.
Absolutely, yes.
Psychiatrist Arthur Barsky says hypochondriacs are misunderstood and even mocked by his own profession, called names such as GOMA, an acronym meaning get out of my emergency room.
Croc is one that's often passed around the most, turkey. But it really speaks to this notion that these people are suspect in some way. The fact that there are so many derisive terms, I think, gets at the fundamental belief in our culture that if you have symptoms for which we don't have a medical explanation, then those symptoms are somehow illegitimate. You are fooling yourself. You are faking.
Do you like the attention of it? I mean, do you just want people to notice?
I really hope that's not true. I'd probably be the worst person to answer this question. But no, I don't do it for attention, and I don't... The only way I use it when I talk to friends, I think, is for humor. But I'm not always telling them, you know, I think I have lupus for these reasons, or I'm trying to get sympathy for it. I think my friends know and my family knows that I worry about these things and they don't make sense. So I don't really think I'm using it for attention. I would hate to think that were true.
There are people who, you know, end up in wheelchairs, end up essentially unable to hold a job, Often the anxiety itself becomes tremendously disabling.
It was after one severe episode that Morgan Griffin knew he had to get help.
I started to carry a thermometer with me. I was taking my temperature easily 20 to 25 times a day. My wife told me to stop, and I would do it in secret. I was just thinking about it all the time, and, you know, I bet I have it now. I have it now. I need to take it right now. And I remember one time I was out bowling with my in-laws and my wife, and everyone's having a good time, and I sneak off to the bathroom and close the toilet stall and take my temperature. And it was a moment where I found it amusing, you know, this feeling of like you're getting your fix in a bathroom stall and it's a thermometer for me. I think that was sort of my rock bottom moment, and I started to see a therapist shortly afterward, and that was not a coincidence.
If the physician says, you know, that looks perfectly benign to me, most people say, you know, terrific, that's just what I wanted to hear, I'll see you later, I'm out of here. For a hypochondriac, that's not reassuring news. And the question immediately comes up, well, how sure are you? Is there any chance that you could be wrong? Shouldn't a dermatologist really look at this? Should it be biopsied? Have you seen many of these in your experience? They're not reassurable. That's an important point. Their belief that what's wrong is not susceptible to simply saying you're wrong. You don't have the disorder you think you do. That doesn't do any good.
Having a good relationship with your doctor is actually, I think, a really vital thing for a hypochondriac.
Does your doctor know you're a hypochondriac?
He absolutely knows. Oh, there's no way he wouldn't.
Just describe to me what he does when he actually sees you.
We've developed a thing, I think, where he has a kind of, in a very long-suffering way, asks me what my concerns are. And he knows that every time we'll begin with me going through a list of 5 or 6 different fatal diseases that I think I might have and providing the evidence. And then he goes through and does an exam and then explains why it wouldn't be relevant in this or that case, and sometimes says like, all right, well, we'll run a blood test and we can test for that. And he has a very good way of just sort of working through these things with me logically that reassures me he's taking it seriously. Because I think if I had a doctor who seemed like he was blowing me off and not taking me seriously, that would be really hard and I'd have to find someone else. You know, I initially hoped to be cured, basically. And I think one thing that's actually helped is realizing that I won't be, that this will always be there. And part of what I need to do is just sort of accept it and learn how to live alongside it and understand, oh, here we go. This is happening. But yes, my therapy has been very helpful. And my therapist understands and you know, tries to help me reframe things in a sort of more logical way. But no, I don't ever think it's going to go away. I think it's just a sort of part of who I am.
I don't think people are cured. It's a chronic problem, so it's been present for a long time. What I think you can hope for, and what we seem to have attained in many of our patients, is the symptoms lose their distressing, bothersome, intrusive quality, and they no longer are so disruptive and disabling. So the best example I can give you is a person we followed up a year after having had some cognitive behavior treatment. And she said, well, if I stop to think about it, I still have that lump in my throat, but I just don't think about it anymore.
Morgan has been with his wife for over 25 years.
She just sort of knows not to engage with me too much, because I often think that talking too much about this doesn't really help. You just keep talking, and it doesn't really go anywhere. And I think I can see in her eyes when she sees I'm starting up again that it's like a, here we go again.
What do you mean, see it in her eyes?
Well, just this sense that, you know, she knows that this will be a couple of weeks of me worrying about this thing.
Do you worry that one day her patience will just run out?
I do sometimes. I mean, I think it hasn't been as bad in the last 5 years, but I think if it got really bad again, it could make me sort of dysfunctional, and I hope that does not happen.
But when they had kids, he became less focused on his own health for the first time.
It did actually change my attitude somewhat toward a sort of realization of, like, well, how well bodies tend to work most of the time. That effect lasted for some time, but then as children got older and took up less psychic space, that I was able to have time and brain power to go back to my old terrible hobby.
And when he looks back to his own childhood, he recognises his father's own terrible hobby.
He himself was a hypochondriac. I mean, he had a story about when he first learned about tetanus. Every morning as a child, he would exercise his jaw to make sure that lockjaw had not set in overnight. You know, I didn't quite understand what it meant, but I think he was nervous, and he was nervous on my behalf. And I am now nervous whenever, you know, my children have symptoms that worry me. And it's a struggle for me not to ask them a lot of questions or, you know, surreptitiously check the lymph nodes under their arms or that kind of thing. I mean, I really try and resist it because I
think... Do you do it sometimes?
Yeah, I have.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that uncertainty, the tension of always saying, but what if? And at some level, knowing that there is no one who can ever say, they're there, it's fine, you're completely fine, which is partly why the idea of getting a minor diagnosis of something can be such a relief for the hypochondriac.
I'm not a religious person, but sometimes I feel like the closest I'm to religious is when I'm doing this, because I feel that worrying will protect me. Worrying will spare me from death. The offering I make to the gods is my worry. And the moment I stop worrying, that's when the disease strikes, so that there's something protective about it.
Over all the years when you've thought, oh, rheumatoid arthritis, oh, could it be my kidneys, cancer, have you ever been right?
Never.
Not once?
Nope. And I would say that, you know, like a stop clock, at some point I will be.
Do you really think you will be then? You're waiting for that moment to be vindicated.
The vindication. It's almost like it unfolds like a narrative in my head, the ashen-faced doctor delivering me the news as the tests come back and the treatments and the tearful farewell to my family. And I sort of imagine that every time.
Thanks for listening to The Y Factor. I'm Becky Milligan, and the producer was Ben Crichton. If you enjoyed this edition, you may be interested in others, such as our examination of collecting or our programme on conspiracy theories. You'll find those and many more on the website, and we'd love to hear your views on the programme and your ideas for future topics. You can reach us at yfactor@bbc.com.
You know, it's like the hypochondriac dies 1,000 times before his death, and it's this weird self-inflicted torture kind of...
The vindication you're waiting for all your life.
That's right. Could go on my tombstone. See? I told you.